Hey, y'all, I am taking this show on the road. To celebrate the launch of my book, I am going to be throwing book parties across this country, and I want you to come. We're going to be doing parties in Chicago, San Francisco, LA, Dallas, Miami, New York City, two options there, DC, Philly, and Boston. So if you live in or near any of those cities, then you are going to want to come and grab a ticket. We are going to have brunch in some places, at others we'll be having wine and snacks. You will get a copy of the book with your ticket, and you will get to come meet me, talk to me, listen to me read from the book, answer some questions. We're just going to hang out and vibe on all things thought work and advancing the feminist mindset revolution together. And of course, there'll also be swag. You can get your ticket at unfuckyourbrain.com/tour, T-O-U-R, or you can text your email to +1-347-997-1784, and the code word is TOR. I cannot wait to hug you in person. Let's go. Come hang out.
Welcome to Unfuck Your Brain, the only podcast that teaches you how to use psychology, feminism, and coaching to rewire your brain and get what you want in life. And now here's your host, Harvard Law School grad, feminist rock star, and master coach, Cara Lowenthal.
Hello, my chickens. How are you all doing with this end of year madness that we are experiencing? Madness on the inside, madness on the outside. So, obviously, New Year's is in some ways, it's like the time that the rest of the world is briefly into self-development in terms of setting resolutions. But of course, if you don't know about the brain and you don't know about coaching, then those resolutions are often just big old shoulds, right? They're just ways that we think we should be or things that we think we should do in order to feel good about ourselves. And so over the years, I've done a few episodes on New Year's resolutions, and that's why we are sharing some of them here today that appeared on other podcasts, so that are brand new to this podcast, but conversations that I had on other podcasts all about what goes wrong when we set New Year's resolutions. And in particular, I love this interview that we are releasing today for the first time on this podcast with the author of The Fuck It Diet, Carolyn Dooner. The Fuck It Diet is a book that I completely recommend to anybody who is trying to deprogram themselves from diet mentality. It's one of the kind of couple of core books that I give my coaches in my advanced certification and feminist coaching program. Before they start, I send them a couple of books that are kind of foundational, like Bell Hooks, Ain't I a Woman, and like The Fuck It Diet. And then we have a couple of others too. But point is, The Fuck It Diet is a amazing resource for those of you who are trying to question diet culture. And I think that's so relevant around the holidays because it's a time that, you know, even those of us who have done a bunch of work maybe on our body image, on our diet mentality, on our thoughts around, you know, making food and exercise a moral issue and all of the kind of associated nonsense, I think that this time of year can be really hard. You know, even if you have been doing that work, there's just a lot of factors that bring it up. Everybody else is fucking talking about their diets, right? People who even maybe normally don't talk so much about food and diets are now making comments about, like, you know, got to do the turkey trot to run off the Thanksgiving pie. And like, next year, I really got to get serious about getting in shape. There's like all of that kind of talk. Many of us are spending more time with our families, which is often where we learned our original diet culture thinking. And so we may, you know, most of the year be able to hang out with people we have chosen who don't comment on bodies, don't comment on food. But then at the holidays, we may be sort of thrown into lots of interaction with people who don't share our values about that, may be commenting on our bodies, may just be commenting on their own bodies, right? But it can bring up a lot of the kind of things that we've had to work on. So I think this time of year is just a time that everybody needs some extra support with body positivity, with health at any size, with like dealing with that little voice in your brain that tells you that you should just really make another New Year's resolution to lose weight. It'll be different this year. And so in this conversation with Carolyn Dooner, we talk about what is wrong with the way that most of us try to set New Year's resolutions, right? What happens when we are trying to motivate ourselves from self-loathing, from self-rejection, from shame, from should, why that doesn't work, and what I recommend you do instead. So I think that if you've ever been a person who set a New Year's resolution, which is pretty much all of us, you're going to find this conversation super helpful. So without further ado, let's get into it.
I'm so thrilled about your book because it's like the perfect thing to recommend to my clients for all the stuff I'm always trying to teach them in bits and pieces. And now I can be like, oh my God, just go read this.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I always love hearing that. And it always like blows my mind. I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah, because it was like, you know, otherwise I was having to be like, I guess read this 1970s book called Intuitive Eating and then also check out this website that also looks like it's from 1992 about health at any size. You know, it was like needed a modern put together version of it.
Oh, I'm so glad. That makes me really happy. So we'll just get into it. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds good.
Will you introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know who you are, what you do, and sort of how you got into the work you do?
Sure. Although it might be kind of fun to just be like an anonymous guest, like let people try to figure it out. I'm a master certified coach. I'm a former social justice lawyer, now a master certified coach. I used to be a reproductive rights lawyer. And so the point of which is only that I'm basically a professional feminist, just in different forms. And now what I do is I basically am a feminist mindset coach, by which I mean that I teach women how to identify the ways that internalized socialization has impacted their thought patterns, meaning like what we learn about what women are supposed to be like or look like or what their value is or what the purpose of their life is, like all of society's messages, explicit and implicit, about being a woman, what those are, anybody who gets socialized as a woman.
Yeah.
And then I teach them how to identify those, how those are impacting them, and then how to actually change their thought patterns kind of piece by piece. I am very practical and analytical and no bullshit. And so I really focus a lot on how do we approach thought change, habit change, whatever it is, in a very concrete, methodical way. And so I do that now through my podcast, which is called Unfuck Your Brain, and through The Clutch, which is my feminist coaching community.
I love it. I love that so much. Professional feminist. Oh, that's so great. And yeah, that's the place I think where, you know, when people write to me all the time saying, okay, I get it. I'm eating more food. I'm feeling more, you know, normal around food. I do, you know, I feel that kind of physical switch, but I'm so stuck on my body. I'm so stuck on wanting to be accepted and wanting to, you know, and that's really, really, really hard stuff. But like that mental piece, those beliefs that, and that's always what I come back to. Like we have these beliefs and we have to become aware of them. But even with that, once you become aware, people are like, okay, so.
You right. Know? A lot of my clients are like, okay, I went to therapy and now I know all of my terrible thoughts. Like, are we, like, this is how I felt too. Sort of like, are we going to do something about them? Or are we just going to like
watch
them keep playing in our
minds? Right.
Yeah. I think that thought piece is the most important. And the irony is, of course, people on the podcast can't see me, but I'm a fat woman and I'm a, you know, plus size coach and a body love and health at any size advocate. Although even, you know, health is problematic in its own way anyway, but we get into all that, but body love, no matter your health, but also health at any size or health as it's available to you. So right. Anyway, the point is
health habits, right?
Yeah. I ironically came to this work when I was still trying to lose weight. So like it was actually, I mean, hilariously, my teacher and coach, who's a dear friend of mine, but I met her because she was doing a weight loss coaching program and I took it. It was like the last thing I tried to do to lose weight before I kind of had my, you know, awakening. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, she was teaching some stuff about, she was teaching what was actually kind of similar to intuitive eating in some ways, actually. But then also this thought work component of like, well, your thoughts are what cause your feelings and your feelings cause your actions. And like, changing your weight is not going to change how you feel about yourself. You have to do this internal work. And I was like, well, wait a minute. If changing my thoughts is going to solve my confidence and self-esteem and self-hatred, who cares what my body, I don't need to lose weight, right?
Right. Like, yes.
I don't need this other part. Why do we have this other part in this program?
Yeah. Like, that's so interesting. That's so interesting because I think a lot of people would be like almost the opposite. Like, right. I don't need to accept myself at the weight that I am now. I need to be
right. Self. And that's just such a misunderstanding of the human brain.
Yeah, it really, like, really is.
You can't be like, every day I like walk with my right foot forward, but then when I like reach this certain point, I'm all of a sudden gonna walk with my left foot forward. Right. Or I'm gonna like write with my right hand, and then like after 100 pages of all of a sudden I'll magically switch to my left hand. Like, right. Your thought patterns are like, it's like muscle memory. You can't teach yourself to reject your body all the way down the scale, right? Yes. And be like, at like 126, I'm still going to reject myself. But when I get to 125, exactly. All of a sudden, I'm going to wake up and love my body. That's not how your brain works.
Exactly. And the way that I kind of put it sometimes is the way that we seek out the goal is the way we're going to experience the goal. And we
Yeah. I call that the destination always feels like the journey did.
Yes. Yes. And it really fucking does.
Yeah, it is not a joke. I mean, and what happens is, if you've done, and I, you know, this is true in any area of your life, right? It's like making money, dating, finding love, whatever. It's like people want to like hate dating and then love being in a relationship.
Right.
Like, no, that's not going to work, right? If you've told yourself it's terrible, then when you end up in a relationship, your brain is still stuck in its terrible mode. And same with your body, same with making money, whatever it is, like the destination will always feel like the journey, because every day on the journey, you're practicing how you think and feel about this part of your life.
Yeah.
You're like teaching your brain to think and feel a certain way about it. And if that's negative, then achieving the object of your desire will do nothing for you. And we see this, of course, right? People lose weight temporarily usually. And then it's like, then they fixate on something else, right? Yes. All you've done is teach your brain how to hate your body.
Yes. Yes, fixate on something else but your body, it's usually is your body. You're still fixating on your body. But even if you temporarily, like sometimes there is that like honeymoon high.
Totally.
Before you start panicking about it going away, but then you're fixating on something else. There's always something else to kind of micromanage and improve. And it just is never ending.
Yeah, it's like if you white knuckle through, let's say you drink too much and you white knuckle your way to stopping, but you don't ever deal with any of the emotional stuff that was causing it.
Yep.
Now you're just a compulsive online shopper instead, right? I mean, you just switch it to the next thing.
Yes. Yes. And that's the other piece. That's, you know, that's what I think of as the emotional piece of like, if you don't, you know, and they're obviously very intertwined, but like the emotions that we push down with whatever vice, whatever distraction, they're going to be there. If you abstain from that vice, you're just going to go to another vice.
Because it's not the action. It's the motivation behind it, right? It's like that fuel. You're still like creating the thing that was fueling the action. So you're just letting it out a different way.
Yes. Okay. Well, this is maybe a perfect segue into what I want to talk about with you today, which is the horrible time of year.
This is 2020, so this could be any time of year you're describing, really.
Horrible time of year of the most horrible year.
Yeah, it's just like we're going to reach a zenith, maybe, then we'll just like come out the other side, like a wormhole. That would be amazing.
Oh, wouldn't it be? I know. I keep trying to remind myself, like, 2020, like, when it turns January 1st, like, it's, everything.
I know, we totally all have magical thinking about that. It's the same thing, right?
I know.
It's like the scale switching over. We're all like, man, 2020, but it's almost over. Like on 2021, we're going to wake up and be like, oh, it was all a dream.
I know. God, I wish. But
time is a human illusion.
Oh, it is. I mean, it is. but, you know, this is the time of year where everyone is sure that they are going to turn their lives around and become new, amazing, impressive, responsible versions of themselves on January 1st. And everywhere you look online and in the fucking mail, like, I can't believe people still mail me things. Like, I still get...
You're getting like resolution mail? That is horrifying.
You know, like gyms in the area.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere you look, people are talking about new year, new you. So I would love to hear your take and your approach to resolutions to New Year's resolutions or your,
oh my God,
or anti-resolutions, however you
approach it. So much to say. I do have a lot of thoughts about it. I mean, so number one, just like new year, new you is just a terrible concept, right?
Like, I know.
Number one, I mean, we were just joking, time is a human construct, but that's true, right? Like, we made all this up.
Yeah.
There's nothing magic about January 1st. And I think, like, what's so delusional about the way most people try to do New Year's resolutions, which I will say doesn't always only happen on New Year's. It's like anytime you make this like vow to start on Monday of anything, right?
Yeah, it's that, it's like, it's that mindset dynamic of like, I'm changing my life around.
Yeah. And it's like, we think we're going to become totally different people.
Right.
But we have no explanation for like, what's the mechanism that's going to make that happen? Right. Like if it's December and you haven't done yoga for 9 months, right, why do you think it's like reasonable to think that you'll wake up on January 1st and you're going to do yoga every day? Like,
right,
December 31st to January 1st, those are just made up words. Like, you wouldn't look at it. I don't know. Like, my cat does not have a concept of time, right? Right. It's not like on December 31st, you'd be like, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and like, I'm going to, you know, like to run marathons around the apartment, which I've never done before. Right. It's all just made up. So, I mean, there's like two levels of this going on. It's like completely unrealistic the way that we think about it. We just are somehow like, well, I hope future me has a totally different set of like motivation and skills and right, whatever to execute this project. And it's one of the whole reasons that it doesn't work is that, I mean, there's multiple reasons it doesn't work. One is that you don't understand how to operate your brain to make habit change happen. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about that in a minute, mm-hmm, how you actually can change your habits if you want to. But this, actually the most important question first is, why are you even doing that? Mm. Right? What is the motivation? If your motivation is because you just somehow from living where and when you live, you've gotten the idea that you should be doing yoga. It's just like, right, it's somehow like a moral good for you to do it or means right, something about you or whatever. Your motive, so many of our goals and resolutions are motivated, especially resolutions, not so much like goals always, but especially like personal care or I think it's a lot of it. It's basically like food, movement, home related, like things that are about our bodies, our habits, our immediate environments, like our processes as a human. A lot of the goals that we set around those are shame-based, mm, right? They're like, I think that I should be this different kind of person. I think I would feel better about myself if I were this different kind of person. And yes, so I'm going to try to act my way into feeling better about myself. And then that always fails because number one, it doesn't work. And number two, you like haven't built the mental infrastructure to actually create habit change.
Right. And a lot of times it's an arbitrary idea of what we should be doing. Right.
Right. It's so random. Like, what about people before yoga came to the West? Like, then no Americans were trying to do yoga on January 1st.
Right.
Like, yeah, I think it can be fun to like, I like to really play, like people take brain stuff very seriously sometimes. And I just like to like play around with it because to just see how like culturally contingent it is. Like, imagine it was like 1901 and you know, you were like resolving to wake up every morning and take that cocaine tonic your doctor prescribed. To make you healthier.
I wish that was what my doctor gave me to take.
I know. They're all like vegetables and movement. You're like, where's the cocaine tonic? But like, that sounds ridiculous to us now, right? Then you would like, wait, be like, my New Year's resolution is to take my cocaine every morning. Right. Like, that's what's going to promote my good health and like good moral status.
Right.
But that was totally a thing. It's all made up, right? It's like all made up and it just is the meaning that we give it. Like, why do you want to do yoga every day? Why do you want to have a more, I mean, the wellness and coaching world is like chock full of people talking about their morning routines. Like they're, I mean, I think it's like 100% the same energy that people used to have when they were designing like temple sacrifice rituals.
Oh my God.
Right? It's just, it's like, like this torture, kind of like magical sequence of things I'm going to do that's going to just like make me feel happy forever.
All,
and make every
all
day
before
amazing.
You eat, right? All before you have.
All before you eat. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that's so interesting about the food stuff, right? Is like humans have such a long history of ritualization around food.
Mm.
Yeah. So anthropologically, it's like very compelling to us, right? Food was a very important thing. It used to be scarcer. It used to be more dangerous. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. there's a part of us that is very drawn to rituals and rules around food for safety, but you have to, but it doesn't actually work.
Right. And so especially now,
Yeah. Especially now, like when you really don't need to worry about, like your food has been pasteurized, it's safe to eat.
Right.
And so I think like we have to acknowledge, you know, I never want it to sound like I'm saying like everybody's being stupid just because you're all dumb. Like, obviously that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
We all do this because we live in a society, especially if we're socialized as women, that tells us that we should be constantly trying to improve ourselves and be better so that we can be worthy enough. Mm-hmm. We're taught that our bodies are, you know, what our bodies look like and what other people think of them is what determines our value and worth in the world. Mm-hmm. And we have this like mix of Puritanism and kind of Christianity and capitalism in this particular, in the US at least, culturally, that just makes us really fixated on like constant attempts to improve ourselves and better ourselves through like work and effort.
Yes. Yes. And it's so tied in with morality and whether we think we're good people or not.
Yeah. It is like the, you know, sometimes I think that like growing up Jewish gave me a slightly different perspective on this, but it's still obviously in the culture around me. It's not like I didn't have these issues too and have to work on them. But I do think we're all kind of like that concept of like original sin, like that you're like born sinful. Right. It's like, we all think that we're just like, we're just somehow wanting. There's something, I mean, every single client I have like thinks there's something undefinable, but definitely wrong about them.
Yes.
Right. It's like some essential wrongness or brokenness. And I'm always joking with them like, okay, well, there's a lot of other women here. So like, what are the odds that almost everybody else in the world is like fine? And I just got like the several hundred of you that are broken, right?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. We're all, you know, without coming together and talking about it, we're all sure that we are the broken ones.
Totally. No,
they're okay. They don't have to do that. There really is something wrong with me. And it's this like secret that a lot of us have with ourselves.
And also like, if there's something truly secretly intrinsically morally wrong with you, which of course there isn't, I don't see how doing yoga five times a week is going to help that.
I know. Sorry. Male, this is an example of what I was talking about. My mail is being delivered and my dog was
totally fine.
Like, oh my God, we're being attacked.
Sometimes my cat comes in and screams just because it's like not dinner time yet. And he thinks it should be.
All right. I think we're in the clear. Molly, it's just the mailman. It's okay. It's okay. We're going to be safe. We're going to survive this probably. Okay.
One hopes, one never knows.
One never knows, especially Molly. Everything is a threat. Everything is a threat. So wait, where were we?
That like everybody thinks there's something intrinsically secretly wrong with them. But like, even if that were true, if you were like truly just fatally flawed in some way, then, you know, how would eating kale and going to yoga really solve your problem anyway?
I know. And yet we're all sure somehow. You know, and it is in the marketing too, of like, if you just do this one thing, you're going to have all this energy. Like, you're tired. Right. What you need supplements. You need more exercise. You need to wake up.
Right. As opposed to like, sometimes human bodies are tired.
Like, go to sleep.
Right. My cat sleeps 23 hours a day.
Oh, like, that's a dream.
I know. Right. I mean, I want to be up for like 8, but right. Like, we have such a distorted idea. I mean, I think because so many of us don't, you know, because of industrialization and electric lighting and like all these factors that are very recent in the history of humans, right. We have like a very unrealistic idea about how productive we should be. Again, it's like that productivity and capitalism piece, like how productive we should be, how consistent we should be. There's something cute when you're talking.
Huge piece. Sorry, what happened?
No, I was trying to remember. Keep going. It'll come back.
No, that's such a huge piece. And I think it's so, I mean, it runs so parallel the way we approach both of these things. And they're obviously interconnected, but the way we approach productivity and laziness, like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I'm so tired. I just need to do more. I just need to be better. I just need to be less lazy. I just need to have a better routine. I just need to, when what most of us need is more rest and more true downtime that we don't even know how to take. We don't even know that we're allowed to take it. When we finally have the chance to, we're like, oh my God.
And we're staring at our phones the whole time because we have these little devices that have been engineered to keep us addicted to them.
Exactly.
And that's not restful. Like, the human eye only started seeing screens like 30 years ago. Not actually downtime for your nervous system.
It's so, so true. But that kind of belief system runs parallel to the diet culture one of there's something wrong with me. Why am I so hungry? Why am I so why am I so tired? Why am I so hungry? The answer we assume is we have to work harder to be less hungry somehow. And we have to work harder to be less tired somehow. When the answer for most people in most circumstances, especially in our culture, is you need to eat more and you need to allow it and you need to rest more and you need to allow it.
Yeah. And they also circle around, right? It's like, I think sometimes the kind of food and body positivity movement gets trapped in this corner where it's as though people are saying or seem to be saying like, and there's no such thing as people ever using food the way we know people use booze or drugs or shopping or anything else. And of course there is that, but that all still comes from the same thing. If you are like punishing yourself and not letting yourself rest and not actually relaxing and, you know, like you're creating these stressed out conditions for yourself. Yeah. And so of course you're going to turn to something for comfort. And for some people that's food. And so like, even if you are eating for not true physical hunger, which is number one, morally totally fine. Number two, totally normal. But like number three, even if you were doing it at some extreme, like all day, every day or something, I don't know, like never sleeping, like staying awake, just eat cake throughout the night continuously. The answer would still be like rest and softness and compassion for yourself, not driving yourself harder.
Exactly. Yes. So, so true. So, so, so true. Oh, man.
I feel like we're like, we could have like a 17-hour conversation.
I know.
I know. I think we got to create real habits. Okay. This is one important thing for listeners to know, because some of y'all are going to try to do resolutions anyway.
Yes.
And you're going to pretend you're doing them because you love yourself.
Right.
But maybe you are. I don't know. If your plan is to give up your morning cocaine, I'm with you. That's probably a good idea. Until afternoon at least. So the thing that here's how, you know, I teach this thing I call a perfectionist fantasy, which I think is highly correlated with diet culture.
Yes.
And so like anybody listen, I can pretty much guarantee that 99% of the people listening to this podcast have this problem without knowing anything else about them.
I'm sure I do, you know?
Yeah, me too. I mean, how did I come up with it? Watch my own brain. That's the thing you have to understand about coaches. We're not saying I'm far from having it all figured out. Everything I teach, I pretty much learned from watching my own brain.
Right.
It's this like, it relates to that, like this fantasy of like, okay, I've never gone to yoga in 9 months, but like starting on Monday, I'm going to go 5 times a week religiously. Right.
Right. Right.
And so that's the perfectionist fantasy, is this fantasy that at some undetermined point in the future, or sometimes you determine the point, you know, it's like going to be Monday, you're going to be this completely different person with a completely different set of habits, a completely perfect motivation. It's going to feel amazing, right? And you create these like elaborate fantasies because that's the only time that you stop criticizing and shaming yourself.
Right.
Right. The whole reason we develop this tendency is because we are constantly internally berating ourselves for like how we eat or how we move or what we do or what we don't do. And so the only relief we know how to find is in creating a fantasy about how we're going to be better tomorrow.
Right.
We're going to be perfect tomorrow or on Monday or whatever. And it turns into this vicious cycle where we get so used to doing that, that we have like zero integrity with ourselves about actual habit change. We already know when we, like after a few years of this, by the time you're in your 30s, at least after a decade or two of it,
right,
you're kind of on to the deal. Like, you know, you're not actually going to do that thing. Right. You know, the odds are like pretty low that you're actually going to do it, but you still feel compelled to create the fantasy because it's the only way you know to like quiet your own self-criticism. So that's why you have to do that self-love part, the thought part, the like, what are you making it mean about you and your worth? Like, you have to do all of that because you have to break. You're right that you need relief from that self-criticism, but a perfectionist fantasy isn't the answer. And in fact, like the opposite is true. The things that will actually change your habits and your life are things that perfectionists hate, like a 10-minute walk.
Right, right.
Right. Or like working on your business for half an hour. Right. Like, right. Yes. It's basically like, I say like the way to pick a goal is to pick something that's so, for perfectionists, is to pick something that's so small that your brain says it's not worth it. It'll never work. Like, I love that. That's how you know you're onto something, right?
I love like, that. I love that so much.
Yeah. Like, what is the like most baseline, like dumbest amount of thing you can do? It's not really dumb. You know what I mean? Like, what is like, sounds so basic.
Yes.
That yes. You know, you can actually do it. And of course your brain's going to be like, that's stupid. Nancy in accounting has such a great ask because she goes to yoga 5 times a week.
Right.
She does 90 minutes of Ashtanga and you're going to go for a walk once a week. But like, that is actually how you change habits is it's like vowing to yourself that on Monday, you're going to wake up and speak Italian fluently.
Right. Yeah.
If you don't speak Italian now, that's not going to happen. And like, whether, yeah, it is painstaking and annoying to learn a language word by word. And that's how it happens.
Yes.
If you've ever watched a child learn a language, that's how it goes.
Yeah. They have one word for a while.
Yeah. Like everything is Baba for like 6 months. Right. And then it's like, and now there's a Dada too. Now we have two words. Like, and like a child, just like you, there does come a point where like the tail, the like scale tips and now there's like rapid, you know, development.
Right.
You have to like earn that. And the same is true with you and habits. So like if you want to move your body more, of course, there are some reasons to do that that could feel good to you, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, I call it, my friend of mine, Amber Carnes, who's a fat yoga teacher, calls it pushing lymph. She's you know, it's like your body needs, your like the lymph needs to move through your body.
I love that. I actually, that is one of the things I say, like to breathe deeper, to like circulate your blood, to like help.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like, so every time I move a little, I'm like, all right, it's lymph pushing. I'm doing it right now. I'm
love
doing
it.
A shimmy with my shoulders, right?
Like, I love that. Yes.
There are good, you know, obviously humans, we live in animal bodies and like, there are some benefits to us for movement, but when you're trying, you have to, number one, have like done the work on the motivation. And then number two, pick a goal that is so small that it seems pointless. And like, you have to think about the long term, right? Humans really overestimate how much we can get done in short periods of time, like a day or a week. Anybody mm-hmm. who's ever been like, I will finish this entire to-do list today,
right?
It's like, definitely not.
Right.
But we underestimate how much we can get done in a longer period of time, like a year. Our brains are just not that good at thinking that way naturally. So like, if you actually, we all know what's going to happen if you vow to like never eat carbs again, starting January 1st, right? You're gonna be face down in a pizza by January 4th.
Yeah.
It's a natural process. If you vow, like if your resolution is, I'm going to take a 10 minute walk twice a week, seems like so pointless, right?
But it's doable and you're going to do it. Yeah.
And at the end of the year, you will have gone on 100, how many weeks are in a year? I can't do that. 104 walks.
Yeah.
Right. That you wouldn't have if you hadn't done that.
Yeah. No, I love this. I love this. And it really does remind me, whoa, the snow is really coming down right now. Sorry. I just looked out.
No, I'm jealous. I'm waiting for our snow to arrive.
Oh, it's exciting, but it is going to turn to rain here. So I'm kind of depressed.
That's rude. I don't approve of that.
Very rude. But so in the tools that are in my book, what I find is that people are like, I don't need to do them. Those are so simple. Like they're too.
Oh yeah, exactly. We're all like, hey, I can't keep a habit to save my life, but I'm sure I'm too sophisticated to do any of these simple
to
tools.
Do, right. To do the 10 minute lie down or like the stream of consciousness writing for 20 minutes. And people are like, so what do I do? But what do I really do? Like, what do I really do to work through
it? You're like, I just told you what to do.
There, it is allowed to be that simple. And often the most profound things for us are really the most obvious and the most simple. Like we
100%.
Know the answer to most things and we're like, no, I can't.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, this happens in thought work all the time. People are like, I think this really complicated thing is going on in my brain. And I'm like, I think you just aren't having a feeling. I think that you should just allow that emotion. And they're like, no, I already did that. It didn't work. So like, I read these three books and I've constructed this elaborate theory and I'm like, or you could just feel sad. I think that maybe is just what needs to happen. Yeah. You just need to feel sad. Your body actually knows how to do that. That's really all that's going on.
I know it's so hard to be a human. And at the same time, it could be so simple if we,
but that's exactly it, right? It's like, this is the irony. We make it so hard by trying to run away from it all the time.
I know.
Right. It's like, we're so unwilling and so untrained in just being on the floor with ourselves for 10 minutes or actually looking at our thoughts for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so we're like constantly racing. And I think like the technology and that fragmentation of attention and time isn't helping with this.
Right.
Like constantly looking for novel stimuli. And we have to really learn how to slow down. And I know, I mean, I sound like such a goddamn hippie. It's like, be with ourselves and our bodies. But like, that's what all of this, the food and the restriction and the binging and the purging and the exercising and the like, all of it is like such a desperate attempt to get away from your own humanness in your own body.
It's so true. It's so true. And it is so annoying that it's that simple. Because it's because it's uncomfortable, especially if you've been avoiding it for such a long time. It's uncomfortable to be with it. And to, you know, one of the things that I say and have noticed myself is that there's a lot waiting there if you've been avoiding it. And it's going to feel like too much, and it's going to feel like it's going to be too much forever. Mm-hmm. But it's just that we have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I always say like we don't really, most of us don't actually know what allowing an emotion is like because we've never done it. Mm. What we have experienced is what it feels like to desperately resist an emotion and try to climb out of your own body.
Yes, and it's a horrible feeling to do that.
Which is horrible, right? Yeah. But so when I say like allow the sadness, people think I'm saying you're going to feel like that
forever.
Like, no. Yeah. 90% of that suffering is you trying to get away.
Yeah.
Like really just imagine your skeleton is trying to exit your body. Yes. It's like, you can't, it's like, that's crazy. Of course that feels terrible. Something being inside something it can't get out of. Right. But like 90% of it is that if you just are willing to be there, it's not nearly as intense. And it also, I think people think there's like something wrong with them about this. And like, it's 100% a skill. We are socialized out of experiencing our emotions as they happen. Right. Like we are taught to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And a lot of us grew up in families where also there was an additional layer of like, that's not okay. That's not allowed. Right. Like you're not allowed
to get, or just get over it.
Yeah. Just like stiff upper lip, just get over it. You're so sensitive. You know, the story of my household growing up was like, I was just so sensitive.
Right.
You know,
same.
So like, it's not you, it's like society and socialization and your family and whatever else. Like it really is just a skill you can learn. I mean, when people join the clutch and start working with me, it's like literally the first thing we teach you is like, how do you process an emotion? It's not a mystical thing. It's like an actual skill you can learn, but just a lot of us were not taught how to allow and self-regulate as children. And, you know, our parents didn't know how either. It just was, we just didn't get that draw of the luck.
Yeah. I do feel like, you know, we are sort of the first generation where we're like, oh, we do go to therapy. You know, most of us do, you know, it's not really that stigmatized anymore. I mean, of course it is a little bit for some people, depending on where you're from, but I do feel like we may be the first generation where we're like, feeling might be okay.
Yeah. Where it's so normalized, at least in some communities, you're right. Not everywhere, obviously, but I do think more for our parents is more like, oh, something's really wrong. That's when you go to therapy.
Right.
As opposed to like, yeah. I mean, when people are always asking like, what's the difference between a coach and a therapist and a teacher and a this and a that, and I'm just like, humans have had a hard time being human since humans existed, right? Yeah. Like there's always been like sages and wise people and elders and the village priest and the teacher and the philosopher in ancient Greece, right? Like there's just always been people who are trying. There have always been people who are like, there's got to be an easier way to be a human. This is very intense and I need some help.
Yes.
And there have always been people trying to be like, okay, here's what we've learned. And a lot of it is pretty consistent, right? It's like... Yeah.
Really
thinking about yourself in a really negative way. Like what is God is love? What does that really mean? It means like loving yourself, right? Like choosing love, your ego is telling you lies. Believing all your thoughts is not a good idea.
Like, yeah. It's pretty consistent. If you look at most of the religions, it's just different ways of trying to tell the same story.
You read the Greek Stoics and you read, you know, Buddha and like, there's some overlap.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, this is so great. Okay. So any last thoughts on resolutions? I think the big takeaway is if you're going to be making resolutions, which is fine.
We will not come to your house and yell at you. You are allowed.
Is to make them so mundane that you think that it's not worth it.
Yeah. You think about compound interest, right? Is this like concept most people don't understand because we're not taught it, which is like, we have a human bias towards like basically thinking like big things are dramatic, right? Like big numbers, big whatever. And compound interest is the way financially that like little bits of money exponentially increase themselves and add up over time.
Right.
And like people routinely, if given a choice of like, do you want $100 today or like one penny with compound interest for 10 days? They pick the $100 I'm actually not doing the math right now, whatever it is, but like you can Google it.
Right.
It's like, but picking the like $1 with compound interest would actually get you way more in the end, right? It's like little habits are what add up to the things that you can then do effortlessly, just like how you learn to walk.
Right.
Stumble, fall. Now you can walk with ease. So I think the takeaway is like, I would say it's a two-step thing. One is like, before you pick a resolution, make sure you understand and like your reason for picking it.
Right.
Is it to make you more worthy? Is it to make someone else change their thoughts about you? Right. Is it to whatever? And I'm not saying, listen, we're humans. Sometimes I still do shit for that reason, but I at least am like watching myself working on it. So like know your reason. And then, okay, if this really is something you want to do, that's not just coming from shame, pick something concrete and small. That's also, it's almost a perfect, they go together, because if your motivation is shame, you will not be willing to pick something small and incremental.
That's so
true. Because you're in like such a rush, because the rush is not actually about the yoga practice. It's about getting away from the shame.
Right.
Right. So you're like, I can't be feeling this way and just doing a little bit every day. Like I need to get there immediately.
Right.
Yes. Whereas if it's actually about building the skill, like I decided to start weightlifting and it wasn't shame-based. So I wasn't like, okay, I need to deadlift 500 pounds tomorrow.
Right.
Right. I was like, this is going to happen gradually. Totally fine. I'm excited for that because it's about the actual experience, not a destination where I think like shame will be gone.
Yes. I think that's such good advice. Kara, thank you so much for talking to me about this. I know people are going to love this. I can just tell.
My pleasure. I felt like reading your book. I was like, I'm going to make that lady be my friend.
Yes. While we were talking, I followed you on Instagram.
Perfect.
I can't believe I hadn't already. Will you tell everybody where they can find you on the internet and otherwise?
Yeah. Otherwise, come to my house.
Yes. Or not.
Don't come here. They're drilling a lot. Unfuck Your Brain is my podcast. You can find it anywhere you find your podcast. I always say that's the best place to start. But if you listen to this and you were like, yeah, I got to get, but if you're having a perfectionist fantasy about thought work and you want to get to that right away, you can go to unfuckyourbrain.com and you can learn about The Clutch, which is my feminist coaching community.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I'll link to all of those things in the show notes as well.
Perfect. Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
If you're loving what you're learning in the podcast, you have got to come check out The Clutch. The Clutch is the podcast community for all things Unfuck Your Brain. It's where you can get individual help applying the concepts to your own life. It's where you can learn new coaching tools not shared on the podcast that will blow your mind even more. And it's where you can hang out and connect over all things thought work with other podcast chickens just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth and it will change your life. I guarantee it. Come join us at www.unfuckyourbrain.com/the clutch. That's unfuckyourbrain.com/the clutch. I can't wait to see you there. Don't forget that if you want to meet me in person, ask me a question, get your book signed, take a selfie with me, whatever it is you want to do, my book tour is your chance. I am going on tour from May 12th through May 24th, all around the country, going to Chicago, San Francisco, LA, Dallas, Miami, twice in New York, two parties in New York, DC, Philly, and Boston. And we are capping these events so they can be intimate parties and celebrations. So you're going to want to hurry up and go get your ticket. Your ticket includes admission to the event, a book, some swag, food and drink, and the chance to meet and connect, not just with me, but with other women in your area and people socialize as women in your area who are also doing this work and trying to live this kind of intentional, empowered life. So you're going to leave maybe with a new best friend, certainly with a new best book. You can get all the information and grab your ticket before they sell out at unfuckyourbrain.com/tour or text your email to +1 347 997 1784 and the code word is tour. I cannot wait to see you there.